The landscape of America in the 1880s was one of staggering change. The nation, barely recovered from the bruising divisions of the Civil War, was now caught in the whirlwind of industrialization. Railroads, steel mills, and factories were rising like monoliths, pushing the country forward at a breakneck pace. But beneath this towering progress, the workers who powered these industries were often crushed under the weight of low wages, long hours, and dangerous conditions. The 1880s were a landslide. It was in this era of rapid expansion that the cry for labor rights began to echo louder than ever. In many ways, it was a landslide, not a single cataclysmic event, but an avalanche of grievances, anger, and collective action, all tumbling toward a single demand, fairness. As the rich and powerful amassed incredible fortunes, the workers who made their wealth possible were pushed further into the margins, exploited by an economic system that saw them as little more than cogs in a machine. In cities from New York to Chicago, from Pittsburgh to St. Louis, the signs of this growing unrest were everywhere. The factory floors, once a place of quiet, rhythmic labor, had become battlegrounds for workers and employers locked in a desperate struggle for control. The nature of the labor movement itself was beginning to change. No longer just a loose collection of local strikes and isolated actions, it was now gathering momentum, forming a new kind of unity that would eventually reshape the American workforce. The rise of labor unions in the 1880s was as inevitable as the Industrial Revolution itself. Unions were born out of necessity, forged in the fires of exploitation. The National Labor Union, NLU, founded in 1866, had laid the groundwork, but it was in the 1880s that the movement truly began to flourish. The American Federation of Labor, AFL, led by Samuel Gompers, emerged as the dominant force, advocating for the interests of skilled workers and focusing on achieving tangible goals: better wages, shorter hours, and safer working conditions. The AFL's rise was part of a larger shift in the labor movement, which began to favor skilled labor over unskilled workers. In the face of industrial giants like Andrew Carnegie and John D. Rockefeller, the union leaders realized that only by organizing skilled workers could they hope to challenge the might of these vast corporations. The AFL's philosophy was pragmatic. Rather than pushing for sweeping social change, it aimed for incremental victories that would directly benefit its members.
A lot of products say they're clean, but what does that mean? Ritual has high standards for what clean means, like their essential prenatal multivitamin, which is heavy metal tested, clean label project certified, and GMO-free. It features key mom-to-baby nutrients like folate, choline, and omega-3. Clean isn't clean enough, especially during pregnancy. Get 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Yet, not all workers were part of this shift. Unskilled laborers, often immigrants, women, and children, found themselves excluded from the AFL's ranks, and their struggles continued without the same level of organizational support. The plight of these workers was a tragedy in many ways. While the skilled trades were making slow but steady progress, the unskilled workers toiled in the shadows, exploited by factory owners who were more than happy to treat them as disposable. Despite the AFL's efforts, the tide of discontent grew stronger, fueled by a series of catastrophic events that punctuated the 1880s. The Great Railroad Strike of 1877 had set the stage for this growing wave of unrest, but the 1880s brought with them more dramatic, violent eruptions. The Haymarket Riot of 1886, which began as a peaceful rally in Chicago demanding an 8-hour workday, ended in violence when a bomb was thrown at police, killing several officers and bystanders. The event, tragic in itself, had lasting repercussions. It turned public opinion against the labor movement, portraying it as violent and radical, and left many labor leaders facing criminal charges. The pull of organized labor, however, was undeniable. As the decade progressed, more and more workers turned to unions for protection. They were fighting against more than just low wages or long hours. They were fighting for dignity. The rise of industrial capitalism had not just created vast wealth for a few, but had also deepened the divide between the classes, leading to growing dissatisfaction among the working poor. The disparity was staggering, and every year, it seemed the gap grew wider. In 1882, for example, while workers in the steel mills labored in dangerous conditions for less than $2 a day, Carnegie's profits for the year were more than $11 million, a staggering figure in an era where the average American worker earned around $400 a year. But the working class wasn't just about numbers, it was about people. Faces in the factories and mines, in the mills and sweatshops, had come to represent the heart of this new struggle. They were immigrants, many of whom had fled poverty and oppression in their homelands only to find themselves in the same conditions in America. They were young girls working in textile mills, earning mere pennies for their labor, their lives spent in darkness and sweat. They were black men and women, freed from slavery, but still bound by the chains of inequality in the South, forced to work in fields or factories for little pay. And yet, despite the hardships, the labor movement began to show signs of hope. The strike, once a risky and isolated form of protest, became a symbol of solidarity. In 1882, the first Labor Day parade took place in New York City, organized by the Central Labor Union. What started as a small gathering grew into a tradition that would eventually be recognized as a national holiday, a moment for the working class to pause, to reflect, and to demand recognition of their contribution to the nation's wealth. The push for labor rights was gaining ground, but it was still a long uphill battle. Employers and politicians fought back hard, using every tool at their disposal to break the unions. The federal government, too, sided with the business elite. The Sherman Antitrust Act of 1890, for example, was intended to break up monopolies but was also used to break strikes, as courts found in favor of companies in cases where labor actions were seen as a hindrance to trade. As the decade came to a close, it was clear that the labor movement had gained both strength and visibility. The workers had not yet won the full victory they desired, but they had shifted the balance of power in ways that would have lasting consequences. They had laid the groundwork for the future struggles of the 20th century, showing that the labor force was not to be ignored, not to be exploited without consequence. They had proven that even in the face of overwhelming corporate power, solidarity and determination could turn the tide. And just as the labor movement began to find its voice, so too did other forces begin to rise, setting the stage for the next battles in the American struggle for equality and justice. The future of the nation was still uncertain, but one thing was clear. The land beneath the feet of both the workers and the elites was shifting. In our next episode, we will look at the forces shaping American business and politics as the nation begins to reckon with the enormous powers wielded by corporate titans. The Sherman Antitrust Act, regulating big business, is on the horizon, where we'll see the first real efforts to take on monopolies and the men who built them.
If you're looking for legit ways to make extra money, you've got to check out The Side Hustle Show. With hundreds of actionable episodes to choose from, you'll learn what's working now from real people making real money, like the Utah mom who built a six-figure business playing video games, or the guy earning $3,000 a month renting out mobility scooters. Online or offline, from Amazon to your own hometown, from YouTube to vending machines, The Side Hustle Show has you and your wallet covered. Subscribe to The Side Hustle Show wherever you're listening to this podcast and increase your earning power today.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance. Like your first home expansion or your first big lightning strike. There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.